Okay, well, today is the, we're at the 4th of January, 2018. On the line with me is activist, poet, philosopher, I don't know, everything else, Peter Marin of Santa Barbara. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Robert. How you doing?
Better than a month ago.
Before we begin, think about everybody homeless from Nebraska East. And what life must be like for them today.
Frosty.
Frosty, to say the least. I don't know how people manage to survive in weather like this.
Probably a number of them don't.
I think that's right. Though many cities, unlike cities in the West, open up their city facilities to the homeless under these circumstances.
Do you have any actual reports, or are you just sort of kind of speaking
I came across in the Times today, I think, information about people reaching out to the homeless, shelters opening up, right? I know in certain cities they have historically used municipal buildings just to have people come in and stay warm.
I guess they used to have single occupancy hotels that used to do that. But,
we don't have those anymore, do we?
Not much. Nope.
No. And it's very interesting, except for a very few places, for all the talk we hear about housing.
Yep.
No one has gone back to the model of the SROs.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I was listening recently to a book by a guy, or a lecture by a guy who wrote about Hobohemia. You probably heard of him. Maybe not. He traces homelessness from the Civil War through the 1970s. And he sees the change after World War II, where there was this focus on building housing, essentially destroyed the single male homeless culture that was existent through single-room occupancy hotels and so forth.
It's true. It fits men much more than any other model. Yeah, the story is, if I remember from my research, right, that one of the explanations for hobo was that it was a contraction of homeward bound for Civil War soldiers.
Huh.
Going back from the war, if in fact their homes existed, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hadn't heard that, but that's possible.
Yeah, there was a huge amount of displacement, as there is after any war.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it partly explains the expansion westward, when a lot of people, you see it even in the Hollywood films, where a lot of people from the South moved west.
Right.
Yes, we, you know, we're concentrating on housing here in Santa Barbara, but it's not quite the kind of housing you would imagine, and it's certainly not SROs geared to single men. And even when they build housing with small units, they put social workers on the bottom floors, right, to check on your behavior.
Right.
Government is usually far more strict about behavior than the owners of SROs.
Repressive and controlled, actually, I guess.
Yeah, that's what happens when you. It's very interesting. It's a model whereby when you bring people back into the fold, what you mean by that is now a monitored fold, right?
Yeah. The way that this guy whose name escapes me, and I'm going to be playing actually this sort of lengthy analysis he gave, which was accompanied his book called Hobohemia,
right,
as he called it. He described this, and now I'm losing my thought, but perhaps I'll pick it up later. Maybe we should do. I guess the point is that there was a freedom that people had. It wasn't just a matter of economic necessity. It was also a matter of choice. Well, given the economic system everyone was living under at that time.
Jack London writes a lot about traveled on freight trains with itinerant workers. You've got to remember that for a long time, up until, well past the 50s, all the itinerant work, picking fruit, working in the mills, whatever was seasonal, belonged to American males before the Latinos were brought in to do the work. Even when I was traveling on freight trains in the, it would have been the late 50s, I would catch trains in California, fruit, and bring crops in with the guys who ordinarily did it. In fact, you could ride the Southern Pacific without bother from railroad because the trains were used by the workers moving from place to place.
Yeah, I mean it's really interesting to see how there has been this kind of this shift that's repressive toward, you know, kind of monocultural, you know, get your own home in the suburbs, you know, nuclear family, four person family, kind of came into play after World War II. But of course now, that fantasy is falling apart too.
Yes, and there's a very interesting twist to this. For one thing, you got to remember that even the Skid Row in New York and the Tenderloin were populated by people who would work part of the year on the crops, right? Follow the wheat harvest east and then end up in Chicago and New York to live on their money they had made during the agricultural season.
Yeah, and the point that's also made is that this created a whole different kind of culture, a sharing culture, a community culture, a supportive culture, a whole area of town. It wasn't just, oh, these poor bums, we have to get past them fast. It became a community of people who actually, and you see this to some extent still in homeless communities, who help each other.
Remember, when I first got to Santa Barbara, Lower State Street had cheap hotels. You will remember them, right?
Yeah, I lived in them a little bit.
Cheap hotels. There were barber college barbershops, right? There weren't, as in big cities, the free lunch bars, which there were everywhere across the country. You'd go into a bar, you'd order a beer, and there would be free lunch. There'd be food laid out for you. That persisted in New York City up through the 50s and early 60s. It was the equivalent sort of happy hour, but it was at midday, and that's where you ate, right, in a bar. Beyond that, when I traveled in the 50s, you ended up in a hobo jungle, of which there were many, even here in Santa Barbara, and everything was shared, right? Whatever people had went into a common pot, and, you know, you got off a train, you made friends with who was there, and everything was shared. In some ways, it was single men who created a collective existence for themselves. In fact, years ago, there was a book about people who lived on the Bowery in New York. The people who did the book expected to find a certain amount of bitterness or marginality, but in fact, guys who lived in the hotels liked living in the hotels, and they took care of each other.
That's what I was reading. Yeah, I mean, apparently it was a long time thing. I mean, there was also organizing and political action happening there too through the IWW. We're thinking, of course, 50 years before the period you're talking about.
But no, you have to go back to the IWW. Go back to Jack London and Coxey's Army, which were unemployed vets, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's being their condition. There was especially after wars, we've seen that in our own times after the Vietnam War, but I knew guys on the streets here who were World War II vets, right? Every war produces waves of homelessness, every single one of them. It's built into the culture in a certain way that people don't understand. Iraq produced homeless vets too, right? welfare if there was a man in the house. Right? So what that did was it destroyed families, especially black families, but it also meant that men were marginalized because they could not stay with women and children. So back when I was doing this stuff, even in the 80s, in the South, you would run into black women who would just say, no, I can't afford to have a man because I get more from the government than I would from a man, right? And without planning to, the government was separating men from families because they would not support any family in which a man was present. In fact, the social workers would sneak around trying to catch men in the apartment.
Yeah, I'm remembering that from 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we pay enough attention to the effect on social and supportive networks of certain government policies without intentionality actually destroy the networks of mutual aid that once existed.
It's like a certain cultural blueprint is being imposed on an entire society. Some of it may see it as, you know, an economic kind of force where, you know, capitalism is involved. But let me ask you about Santa Barbara, because that's your roost and your neck of the woods and perhaps the area you're most familiar with, though. Sounds like you've been everywhere, or many places anyway. Any hobohemia left there in Santa Barbara?
No, nothing that isn't just completely on the streets and pursued by the police in one way or another. You will remember that up until, what would it be, 15 years ago, we had a hobo jungle, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was capacious enough to support or to be able to hide and hold several different communities of the homeless, right, like little tribes. The one in Ventura along the river lasted much longer than ours did, and people were still there up until the floods a year or two ago, and then, of course, this year's fires. But people set up camp along the riverbank and created real communities, as they did in our hobo jungle, which used to be right down by the beach along Cabrillo Boulevard. I spent a lot of nights down there. It was surrounded by trees and bushes. So when you were inside it, it was as if you were in a totally separate world. People walking along the beach or along the boulevard could not see you, and you could hear them, but you couldn't see them. It was like being in a protected universe. And a lot of the guys in it were like vets, and what they did was really reproduce jungle camps. That's until the city decided to put an end to it and came in with their bulldozers and actually knocked everything down as if they were defoliating Vietnam.
And yet, ironically, what we're seeing in Oakland, San Francisco, I don't know about Santa Barbara, and even in Santa Cruz, because there's such a growing number of folks outside and the huge rent profiteering scene that's taken over rents in California particularly, you get massive encampments under freeways here, there, and everywhere. New hobohemia, perhaps.
No, well, I only wish. The trouble is Santa Barbara has a policy of when complaints reach a certain pitch, they just move in and destroy whatever was there. There was a sort of unspoken truce down on East Beach area, in the West Beach area, where people would put their tents up in the hills or the little mounds right behind the beach at night and then take them down in the daytime. The police didn't like them keeping them up, so in fact they took them down. And as you know, this really hasn't hit Santa Barbara yet, but in many communities like Los Angeles and elsewhere, the courts have ruled that if you don't have a place for people to go, you cannot keep them from erecting structures for themselves.
And is Santa Barbara actually following that, I guess it was in L.A., sort of a Jones settlement? It was never actually formalized into law, but it's an apprehension, I think, that city governments have about being legally liable if they go after people who have no place to go.
No, we've never had that. It's very interesting. We haven't had homeless people, except for the group down on West Beach, take advantage of the law in theory, which has always struck me as interesting. They could go on the green area in front of City Hall here, put up their tents at night and take them down in the daytime, and I don't think the city could stop them unless they offered them another place to do the same thing.
You know, it's interesting. That's what activists in Berkeley are doing with the group First They Came for the Homeless. They've set up their tents again, as they have throughout the last year, at different points at the Berkeley City Hall, as well as in other places throughout the city. And actually, Salinas has created a law in order to get around this potential court ruling that has said that you can put up your tents at night, but we can take all your stuff during the day if it's more than you can stuff into a trash can.
That's a variation of the arrangement in L.A., where the agreement was to put things up at night and take them down in the daytime, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think the law required that, but that was sort of the arrangement the city made with the homeless and their leaders, right? That they would put up their tents, they would take them down, they would store their stuff nearby, and then at night they'd put the tents up again.
Yeah, I heard it more as a sort of, you had to be a certain number of feet away from a business.
That's true. That wasn't in the court rulings, though.
No.
That's just the arrangement cities began to make.
Well, it was the settlement that essentially superseded the court ruling, I think.
Right. It did supersede the court ruling. But in point of fact, I think people are fairly safe. You know, in Fresno, there was the ACLU, I think, brought the case. There was, I believe it was perhaps settled or went to trial, but the city of Fresno found responsible for destroying homeless property. And by that we mean sleeping bags, clothes, right? What used to in the old days just be considered garbage. They had to pony up $2 million.
Yeah, $2.3 million, I think. The only trouble is that settlement expired and the injunction expired. I think it was either this year or last year.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, I talked to activist Mike Rhodes there in Fresno a couple months ago, I think. And they are, you know, they're facing a new camping ban there that has been enacted. And it's... there are, you know, different attorneys working on that, and as there are in the Bay Area, where people like Ocean Newman are suing Caltrans, and there's the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty supposedly has its eye on Santa Cruz, but we've been hearing that for some time. But what about your legal machinations? You said you had to go out of town to get a lawyer to help try to defend the rights of people in RVs during the day, if I'm not mistaken, from our last conversation.
Yeah, we're bringing suit against the city because of its citywide ban on vehicles of a certain size, meaning RVs, which are not allowed to park anywhere in the city in the daytime or at night, except in places offered up off the street by the safe parking program.
How many vehicles does that cover in terms of the percentage of vehicles that are actually used for people who are trying to live in them?
Safe parking has places at night for maybe 30 vehicles. For the daytime, they have about 15 places.
And that, what would you estimate? How many vehicles is that? Are we talking about in total that are left out of that program?
I would say 50 or 60 vehicles, which were parked park in the county now.
And
however, I do have to say that we've studied this this law pretty carefully in other laws, and it's fairly clear to me that the city has no right to violate DMV regulations, and the DMV regulations and their history in the courts is fairly clear that the city cannot do what it's doing. beyond that, the city has decided the dimensions of the vehicles to ban, which are totally at odds with the DMV regulations. So the point is, according to the DMV regulations, if you license a vehicle of a certain size to drive on the streets, the implication is it can also park on the streets. And the city can't say, oh, well, the vehicles can be on our streets, but they can't park. It's just sort of off the wall, overstepping of all kinds of legal limits to which the city has paid no attention whatsoever.
Are police and deputies enforcing this kind of stuff or not?
Well, the thing is, it's not that onerous a law. There's two things here to make note of. One is the ticket is $49, right? So that means either a complaint has to come in or the police have to see you, and then they ticket you for $49. Now, that's a lot for people whose income is $800 or $900 a month, but it's not like having your vehicle towed.
Let me interrupt you and ask, are we talking $49 on the city code book or $49 after court costs?
$49 as a ticket.
Because here in Santa Cruz, a sleeping ban ticket is $20 on the city books. It's actually $197 once you hit the courts.
Well, this is just a parking ticket.
Oh, right? Okay. Well, these are... All right, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you just go down and pay the parking ticket,
uh-huh.
As far as I know, right?
Okay.
However, even that is not legal. And beyond that, which is the interesting part, you know, the city has had a habit in the past of towing RVs when they violated several kinds of laws, including the 72-hour law or when there's a certain number of tickets. It turns out, according to the DMV regulations, which we read rather late in the game, which was a little bit shameful, if you want to tow a vehicle that's parked on the street, you have to give the owner a 10-day notice and then a 3-day notice.
Wow.
What you're really doing is taking their property, right?
That's a statewide law?
Yes, it's in the state DMV code.
Wow, interesting.
So that when they've towed vehicles for violating the 72-hour law, they had no right to do it. And in theory, they're responsible for the repayment of all the costs of people in getting their vehicles back or for the value of the vehicles that were never gotten back. We're going after them on that.
What stage is your response at?
It's the first part of it has been written. It should be finished within the next 2 weeks and then filed.
So it's sort of making its way, but taking its time.
I am working with people who are working pro bono and over whom I have no control.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
It's a very small staff. We don't have volunteer lawyers here. We have to pay an attorney in San Diego a couple of $1,000s, and I'm paying the people preparing the suit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of money. Because we do not any longer in Santa Barbara have anybody who will do pro bono legal work.
Are vehicles being towed now in violation of the law?
No, this is what's interesting. I wrote notes to the chief of police, the mayor, and the city attorney, and I pointed out to them that they have no right to be towing vehicles, and they seem to have stopped towing them. There seems to have been also a state law recently passed, or a court case in which people illegally towed vehicles and were told to stop.
Of course, there's the old Desert Rain decision of a couple of years ago, which prohibited them from, ticketing people who were in their vehicles, habitating their vehicles.
That was cars. Also, what our city has done, which is interesting, is it said, theoretically, if you need a wheelchair, you can have an RV to accommodate it, but when people have applied for the exemption, because they have wheelchairs, they've been denied one after the other. So the city has never exempted a single vehicle, the owner of which requires a wheelchair.
That's a part of your lawsuit?
That too is part of the lawsuit. Again, the DMV states quite clearly that if you require a lawsuit, you can have an RV to accommodate it.
If you require a wheelchair, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the city ostensibly pays service to that, but in practice, of course, does not. So they say, well, you can apply, but whenever you apply, they deny it.
And nobody is sitting in at the offices where they're denying it or anything like that?
No. No, everyone's waiting for us to file our suit.
Oh, boy.
We don't have, I mean, this is very interesting. We do not have activist homeless people any longer. And we do not have any activist advocates left. It's been a curious process, which I don't think has occurred elsewhere, in which all the active guys, you were one, right? You were here and went away. Ken Williams was one and is very ill, probably dying. There were a couple people who were great street activists, but they became part of the bureaucracy, though they can't do what they were doing before, right? That would include David Hopkins, who we knew as Hopper, Jeff Schaefer. All of these are very decent people, but they're in the provider business now and not the advocacy or protest business. So we just don't have that at all. It's disappeared completely.
What about the numbers of people who are outside, let's say, putting aside vehicles for the moment, compared with 10 or 15 years ago? It's generally, well, I'm getting contradictory figures on whether homeless numbers are growing or not. With my lefty bias, I kind of assume they're growing, but what's your sense about Santa Barbara?
It's hard to say. You know, they do this yearly count, which I don't trust, but I think it's relatively constant, right? It isn't going up or down. It's makeup changes because they manage to house some people, right? But I would say the number of people on the streets is roughly the same as it was a few years ago.
So I looked up the census for Santa Barbara, and I know that when we've talked about it, you said that there are also adjacent communities that are a part of the broader Santa Barbara area.
There's the county, right? Uh-huh. Which is the city, except you step across a line, right? The line is up around the Mission, so if you go up beyond that, in certain areas you're in the county. You go one direction, you're in Carpinteria. The other direction, you're in Goleta, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd need numbers for the whole area to make any sense of it.
Right. Well, on the other hand, the lawsuits that you're doing are citywide, right?
Well, they are citywide, but if we win or get a settlement, we immediately go after Carpinteria and Goleta, which have their own separate laws, even worse than Santa Barbara's about RVs.
So I noted the census online was 88,000 folks in the Santa Barbara city area. And you know, I don't know, the homeless population is always, of course, the crapshoot to figure out what that is, but something.
My rule of thumb was always about 1.5%, right? If you had nothing else to go on.
So we're talking about, I don't know, 1,200 people you're talking.
Yeah, but look, you and I know there's no way to count it. Are we going to count people who sleep on the floor of their friends' houses, right? Are we going to count people in cars or RVs? How do we count? I don't think anybody knows how to count.
Right? You still have a homeless death memorial down there, or did you ever? I know we do up here.
They do. We do that homeless night, right? The particular night when we remember the homeless dead.
Right.
But I think what's interesting is that our community, which was once in a position of a kind of leadership, is now retrograde. As you know, we lost Casa Esperanza, which means that we have no day center, we have no midday meal, we have no washing facilities, and we have no shower facilities, and we have no laundry facilities.
Santa Cruz experienced something similar with the loss of meals at the, what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But again, recently Santa Cruz has begun to tolerate and actually to provide some kind of, a little bit more than token services, but, you know, porta potties and wash stations for the people camping in San Lorenzo Park, which of course is outraging.
We don't even have that. In fact, up until last year, there was a place called PATH, which is a drug recovery center, which took over the facilities of CASA, right? And they at least had permanent winter beds for, I think it was 50, or maybe 100, I think it was 50 beds a night, which were permanently available in the winter. And this year they eliminated them without telling anybody. At the same time, the rescue mission is undergoing a renovation, so they eliminated their winter beds without telling anybody. So we're in a position this year where we have far fewer winter beds than we did ever before, but we do have the warming centers, but they've never been activated because it hasn't been cold enough or rainy enough.
So have you checked out under the freeways to see if something similar to other urban areas is happening where people are putting up tents?
No. I mean, it's very interesting here. We don't... The tent communities have been over on West Beach, right, near the beach.
Hmm.
There have been some camps along the railroad right-of-way, right, where you have to deal with the railroad people and not the city people. That's it. There are some camps along the railroad in Montecito, I know. But people stay out of sight. They even sleep downtown because you come out. Look, the whole thing is crazy, right? We have all these new rules. You go downtown at 12 o'clock at night, you see people sleeping under the marquee of the Granada Theater. Or you see people sleeping on benches right across from the Granada. Nobody's supposed to be doing that, but they're just people scattered all through State Street. They stay out of sight, and the police mainly don't go after them. And in our town now, the most tolerant people are the police. Because they're used to homelessness, right? So they let it go.
Something similar here where you had Police Chief Mills, who was a new police chief, came from Eureka in the summer here, in an interview with which I found surprising because I kind of cornered him on the street, and he came right over, and he was very forthcoming in his speech. I was very skeptical, still am, really. But he claimed he was going to take action to make sure that the sleeping ban on the camping ordinance was not here enforced in Santa Cruz during the night. And that, in fact, is what he has done openly. He's persuaded a previously reactionary policy city manager who really runs the town, Martine Bernal, and the city parks and rec, which have been getting increased funding to harass homeless people, to stop nighttime busts of simply for sleeping. At least this is now his publicly stated policy and seems to be actually happening. But I would think that in Santa Barbara, because of, you know, the closure of these different winter shelter options, limited as they were, you'd have more people visible than, let's say, the last few years. Is that the case?
I think they've learned to stay out of sight, right? I mean, look, we have a police force that responds to complaints, right? And it wants to keep the homeless off State Street because, as you may know, State Street is failing, right? Like the downtown areas of many cities. We have a glut of empty storefronts. Nothing to do with the homeless, but people are really legitimately worried about the downtown area because online shopping has taken over the place of a lot of local shopping. So we have bars and restaurants downtown, but stores don't make it. We have one store closing after another. We had a Macy's downtown that closed, you know. We had several big closings. No more large bookstores downtown. Everything is in flux. And as a result, out of desperation, they keep trying to monitor the homeless They've also worked very hard to make the library off limits, so they have a whole series of new library rules.
Similarly, here in Santa Cruz.
I don't know the rationale, because what they don't have any place for people to go, right? There's, as I said, the big shelter is gone with its day center. People used to go into the. Luckily, we've had no rain down here. Luckily and unluckily. But luckily for the homeless, because the library is one of the places they used to go to get out of the rain. Right now, you're only allowed to use the library for, quote, library purposes. Remember, they used to have a nice sort of circle of chairs around the fireplace where people would go sit. Can you recollect that?
Well, I remember that I used to, you know, occasionally hold meetings at the library and meet people there and... Same thing here, and I mean it's reached the point where it is illegal to walk onto the city council, city hall grounds, or the library grounds. By which I mean the outside areas. After 6 o'clock for the city hall, and I think after 9 o'clock for the library. You don't even have to be sleeping or lying down. If you're standing there with a sign, that's now a crime in Santa Cruz. We had a thing called the Freedom Sleepers that were doing weekly sleepouts, and then they became what we call the Survival Sleepers, who were doing nightly sleepouts after the shelters had closed. And that seemed to be a kind of a growing protest movement there, as it was in a way, but it ultimately, the city manager went after it by falsely using obstructing the sidewalk tickets. I mean, you're talking about not having to go abroad to get a lawyer, which you do, and which you should be commended for. Not that I have a lot of sympathy for lawyers generally, but or legal approaches, but we can't even do that. I mean, there's no, you know, we. But what's happened as I said, the strange reality is, in order to please the merchants downtown here in Santa Cruz. Chief Andy Mills, the new police chief, has essentially declared a policy of no ticketing at night if people are out of sight or if people are not causing problems on public property. And also, the folks that are sleeping in parks, it's illegal to be in a park after dark in Santa Cruz, may well be in Santa Barbara, I don't know. I should ask you that.
I think it's much the same here. I mean, we have a new police chief, Lori Lunau. Listen, I think they're all trained in the same place in community relations, right? She's the same. She smiles a lot. She has told city council she's not going to violate any kind of constitutional rights, right? She holds the police in check, right? She's more liberal than the city council or the merchants. But there's a lot of pressure. You know, when we went after the DMV issue, we didn't go to the city council. We went to the police and the city attorney, right? And I think they recognized that they were in danger because of a kind of continuous haphazard violations of the law. And they stepped back from it, not the city council.
Yeah.
City council presses forward, and I don't think the chief or the city attorney can stop them, but they try to act on their own to keep the city out of trouble. That's what I think is going on down here.
There's a lot of jabber in Santa Cruz City Council about housing. They're doing, you know, session after session of researching housing. But when people show up in mass demanding immediate rent freeze and rent control insofar as it could be done, given Costa-Hawkins, the state law, they attempt to get frozen out. But then actually people have refused to leave the council chambers in mass, and you get the usual, you know, we'll look at this down the road. But there is, I assume, something similar is happening in Santa Barbara.
I envy you the activity that you have. Here's what's happening in Santa Barbara. First of all, we don't have that protest activity in any way, right? Hmm. We actually have a group of young people who are fairly liberal or radical, and I spent months trying to get them to care about the homeless, and I got nowhere. Right? They took up the issue of police brutality against black people. In both cases, we don't have much police brutality, and we don't have many black people. But that became their cause. But the homelessness and homeless rights didn't interest them in the slightest way. But leaving that aside, we don't have anybody protesting at City Hall or outside City Hall. But what's happened is, and it's a version of what you're describing to me, almost all our advocates have been seduced by the notion of housing as the problem to homelessness. So there's immense amounts of energy that go into planning for solutions to the housing problems, even though we don't build much affordable housing. Nonetheless, everybody is at work trying to, in theory, get people housing, though most of it is just talk and not action. But there's nobody left, nobody, to concern themselves with the situation or the condition of the large numbers of people who are going to be on the streets until pie in the sky day when there's housing for everyone, right? Nobody gives a shit about what's happening to homeless people day by day. They're going to fix it all by housing them all. Right? And that's all you hear. A couple months ago, I went to a supervisor meeting, and HUD had just announced its new guidelines for grants made to cities. And apparently, it was all their grant money was associated to organizations that were working on housing. So all of a sudden, many of the organizations who were operating on several levels were inevitably had to give up everything but working on housing, because that's where the HUD money came from.
Same thing has happened in Santa Cruz with shelters. Sheltering essentially has become a private charity operation run by a group called the Association of Faith Communities during the winter, and the emergency housing that was only token to begin with, really, emergency shelter, you know, has essentially turned into, you got to have vouchers, pathways to housing, yada yada yada, and people who could normally come in and get a meal during breakfast and dinner, just because they were outside and homeless, are not allowed to do that now. And they have gates. They have guards, they have ID checks.
I get it. Look, here's what's happened. And it's, to me, scary. Everything has been bureaucratized and institutionalized, right? So that it's all about programs. None of it is about people. The people running these programs have nothing to do with homeless men and women, right? They're not with them on the street. They don't see them. They don't listen to them, and they don't hear them. They don't have to. They're running organizations. It's like NGOs in poor foreign countries. But in the midst of it, the homeless and their rights and their specific daily needs are ignored completely. Completely.
Yeah.
We don't even have the few people doing stuff that you seem to have there. We have Doctors Without Walls. That's a great organization, but it deals mainly with health, right? Mm-hmm. And we have Jeff Schaefer, who still runs a, a week and tries to help people with their problems.
The Hank Show is no more?
What? No, he's still doing that.
Ah, okay.
What did you ask me? What's no more?
The Hank Show.
I don't know about that.
I think
maybe it's on Sunday.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but we also have two great cops, Officer Hove and Officer McBride, who I worked with a couple times, and they are amazing when they deal with homeless people and their problems, right? They're what activists should be doing. They find someone with a problem, they spend 3 days fixing it. They walk them through the DMV. They walk them through the ticketing process so they don't have to pay their tickets. They get their vehicles back for them. I know because I worked with them. I was funding it, and they were doing the legwork. But they work as hard as anyone I've ever seen to get a problem fixed.
Hmm.
Right? And that's what we used to have regular people doing, and now nobody is doing it. I do a little of it, but I'm just tired now. Right?
Is Food Not Bomb still active in Santa Barbara, or was it ever? I'm trying to remember. I think it was at one time. But
say it again?
Food Not Bombs organization?
No, never here.
Huh, interesting.
Never here, no.
Is there an attempt to drive food servers out of public places so that because
they don't have food servers in public places.
I mean, I know they were going after what I call the Hank Show, and I guess...
They went after them because of... and things had gotten sloppy and untidy, right? So Jeff Schaefer worked with the Parks Department to smooth things over and make sure that everyone cleaned up after themselves.
It's not a sort of an organized approach such as the guys like Robert Marbot, who's a get-them-all-inside consultant, because that way they'll be closer to social services and housing mythology there. That they're going after Food Not Bombs, for example, in El Cajon, I think.
No, but we did have, you know, there's the people who run PATH, which took over which took over CASA and its facilities, right? Actually, in response to some criticism, maybe partly from me, I don't remember, issued a public statement saying they felt that the provision of homeless services was simply a form of, what's the word we want?
Enabling?
Yes, that's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. And if you gave people services, you were enabling them to continue with their homeless lifestyles, and therefore it was a danger because you weren't forcing them to get off the streets. It was an extraordinary letter after all this time we've spent trying to fight this battle about services. Just to say no, not only do we not need services, but services do harm. I could barely believe it. Luckily, a couple people, I think Nick Welsh responded, a couple people responded, but it was quite extraordinary. And I don't want to get into names, but a couple of the people who signed it filled me with disbelief because they were theoretically good and decent people.
Is ICE and Department of Homeland Security increased its actions against Latinos and undocumenteds in Santa Barbara, and has that had an impact on homeless people?
No, I don't think we have a problem with ICE. We've never been very responsive to them. I've been in jail here even a long time ago, where people would come into jail for driving infractions, right? People who had no licenses and couldn't speak English, and all the police did was ask them if there was someone in town who could vouch for them, and then they released them. Listen, we're a tourist town. We need those. Honestly, the story in today's paper about how farmers are upset because they're not going to have enough laborers to bring in the crops this year, right? So we need these people. We need them for restaurant jobs. No one else will do, right? Hotel jobs. And everybody in town, of course, uses either undocumented people or recently documented people for gardening, carpentry, all kinds of work, right?
No Union of the Homeless is raising its furry head.
Nothing. Nothing. Not the slightest bit. That's... I'm 82 years old, so I'm not going to, I want to stop what I'm doing already. But I know someone should be organizing these people, but I just can't do it. I tried to organize the young people so they would do the organizing, and I couldn't get them to do it.
Well, I blame you for all of this, Peter.
Yeah, I know. I feel, I mean, you know, Robert, we've been fighting this battle for a long, long time. Right? And I think for a while we were a little bit ahead of it, but I think we're now back to square one.
Have you, you're a poet as well as an essayist and an activist still. Sorry, you're still an activist. Can't help but call you that.
Look, what we do at Committee for Social Justice is they've towed someone's vehicle, we get it back for them, right? I get calls from the dog pound that, well, that's a nice story. I get a call from the dog pound. The dog pound has such enormous fees. They took some guy's dog, kept it for a few days, gave it its shot. Its cost was going to be $380. I said, $380? How come so much? And they said, well, for one reason, there's an extra penalty if your dog isn't spayed. So I say, well, okay, would you tell the guy, please, to get the dog spayed so I don't have to pay this much next time? And then she says to me, but the dog is 11 years old. It's too old, so we can't spay it. So they're charging me the spaying fee for a dog who can't be spayed, right?
Sounds like age discrimination to me.
Whatever it is, the point is that we laid out the money and got the guy's dog back. I mean, what we do is when someone has an emergency, we fix it. That's all. And sometimes, it's funny how many gaps there are in the system. We'll have people who get housing, but the law is they have to be able to come up with the deposit on their own, right? And, of course, they don't have the money for the deposit, so we come up with the money and just give it to them. You know, I mean, it's the old story. I have one donor, and when I ask him for money, he gives me whatever I ask for, and so we get people out of trouble.
Well, send him up here, could you?
It's a great thing to have, right? We don't make loans. We don't have people fill out forms, right? I get mad at them all the time because some of them do pretty stupid things, but we don't refuse help to anybody but a couple of recurring drug users who just drained our coffers with repetitive behavior that I know will never stop even if you help them.
Any problems with Hep A and concern about that being a way of essentially demonizing the homeless population, as we've seen, I think, in some cities, and it's been the case to some extent here?
No, not up here. Listen, they're demonized up here already, right? No one wants them around. No one wants them on State Street. No one wants them on Miltis. No one wants to see them anywhere. But in point of fact, the problem is, we're used to the problem here. Everything is pretty static in a certain way, right? It's just, it is what it is, and it's not going to get better, and it's not going to get worse. We do have a new mayor this year, Kathy Murillo, right? And she'll be better about homelessness than the last mayor we had. But there's so many other things going on in the city, so many crises, that it's hard to imagine anybody's going to spend a lot of time on the homeless.
I'm not much of a fan of poetry, but I enjoyed your poetry that you sent out for New Year's Eve, which was all about your own personal experiences, I think, pretty much.
Pretty much, not always. The last few years, I would always send political poems with it. This year, I just decided to go in the other direction.
Do you have any secret political poems that you have near the phone that you want to read? Well, why don't you start? And if I fall asleep, then you'll hear me snoring. So.
All right. A friend of mine, in a note, sent me a friend of mine in an email note mentioned to me. Okay, got to go upstairs to get this one. A poem by a Swedish Nobel Prize winner, Tomas Trattomer, who recently died but did win the being ruled by empty helmets, that is, helmets with no one in them. So I wrote a poem on that theme for my friend, which he quite liked. So I'm going to start off reading that, but I need my glasses. Everything is slow here because we're getting old.
Yep, no problem.
Now I'm going back down the stairs. I didn't expect to have a poem to read.
Well.
It's as political as you can be, I think, but it's very... I mean, you remember in my Christmas message, I said, listen, I'm not going to talk about Donald Trump because everybody's doing that. Yeah. And I only tried to point out that in terms of international policy and domestic policy, things have been fucked up for 40 years, and it wasn't Donald Trump's fault.
Right.
Right. You don't get to be virtuous just by being against Donald Trump.
Nope.
Which is unfortunate, because that's the politics we have now, right?
Yeah, they have, anyway.
Women have a different politics now, God bless them, and the Black Lives Matter people do, I suppose.
That's true. That's true.
So when groups can identify themselves, people act up. But for some reason, where I am, the homeless don't identify themselves anymore the way they used to. Okay. The helmets, this is the poem. With the helmets with no one inside float past my window in the no man's land of lost souls beyond the beyond, paling into comparisons. Sing freedom, sing freedom, sing the lost land, the last land of man's desiring. Three pigs and a blanket and blow the house down, singing in their cells, nearer my God, or walking naked, knee-deep in the snow. The armed guards, I might have said gods, ringing them round in the drawn blood purity of good intentions. Do we sin merely by being alive, or is this the kingdom of ends? The images whirl in the mind, the people dance in the streets, the stars shake in sanctified time to the music of the spheres. Above, the violin din, with a violin dent, or a kink in the otherwise great chain of being, bears dancing upright as if bidden, pawing at women, licking their skins. Can anything else be so deep or so hidden? It is our only world, said Goodman. Bite into it, tearing it as the animals do, flesh from bone, leaving behind only the skeleton, the visible order of things, the all of it, no longer held in the hand of a god, kneeling on stones, climbing the bloody incline. Tell me, oh tell me, what is your heart's deepest demand? The helmets have turned at right angles to the house, face us with great holes for eyes, and the blank stares of those without souls, guiding only by the screams. Yes, yes, I will give you the names of those who want to survive. Is that what they want, these circular forms, emptied of meaning, not quite alive, issuing orders, learning to say, take him away, before climbing to own the world, before claiming to own the world? Want me to go on?
Yeah, if you want.
Okay, last page. Do we need drumbeats, an anthem, some kind of pledge, hurtling over burned bridges on the roads out of town, heading, no doubt, into history's end, a paradise, red, circuses, lions, and victims? Give me that, and I'll make you a state on a platter of bones taken from the slaves who would otherwise be burnt alive. There's nothing more to be said, am I right? Anyone want to protest? Nod your heads, that will suffice. All those ready to die, raise your hands. I've laid out the cake. There's no bread left to break. I'm off to conquer new lands. Is this a great country or what? It loves me. It loves me not. What's that? I can't hear you. Speak up if you'd like to be shot. That's it.
Hey, I like it. When did you write that, Peter?
I wrote that days ago, in about 15 minutes, I was just doodling and thinking of my friend's phrase about empty helmets, and I wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So, not personal, at least.
Yeah, well,
It is, aren't you? Robert, how old are you?
I'm 70.
You know, at my age, 82, there's a part of me, really, that thinks other people should be making this fight, and I get to spend some time preparing for death, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's unnatural. And I think, but you can tell me I'm wrong about this, I think that I have fewer allies than I've had for the last 50 years.
Yeah. You know, I'm not conversant with the Santa Barbara scene, but based on the reports you've given me in the last couple of years, you know, your position is in contradistinction to, you know, the prevailing wave, which is, you know, social services, mythologies about housing that doesn't exist, pretending you have a choice between two parties that offer no choice and that do the same thing. And worse when they're out of power.
I don't think anybody has much of an idea left about freedom. That's what I think. Right? I know some people fight for their rights, but the notion that other people have the right to be free of what we want for them, I don't think that exists much anymore.
Hmm.
You know, my basic nature is anarchist, not even libertarian, right? We were talking before about people in the hobo jungles. I think people can take care of themselves and can take care of one another.
Yep. Yeah.
If you just stop fucking them over, right?
Yep. Well, that's, I think, been my focus for many years in terms of at least, I mean, I take a somewhat legalistic focus because I focus on the laws, but it's, you know, it's, I think you're right. I think if people need to have a chance to do what, in a way, comes naturally.
Yes, and we agree. The trouble, I mean, the interesting thing is we focus on the law because, in point of fact, the courts are now better than the politicians, and they're better than most communities, right? Especially in California, the liberal courts are the only protection people have against their communities and the politicians of both parties.
Are the Santa Barbara courts protecting the homeless, do you think?
No, I think that the state court does.
Mm.
I think the appeal court and the state Supreme Court do, right? I think they are better than our local government. Well, you see that everywhere, right? The decisions about sleeping in cars, the decisions about destruction of possessions, right? Those are the courts overruling the municipalities.
The Ninth Circuit, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, and that's where you have to go to look for some kind of fairness in treatment or just the recognition of rights.
I'm going to have to cut you off, though. Let me give you the last three paragraphs.
I have nothing left to say.
You got a lot to say. You've said a lot of it. I'll get back to you.
All right. I always like to do this, so let's do it again when you're ready, right? And again, I admire you for keeping your hand in, right?
Well,
it's pretty rare these days, Robert, so you're to be commended for it.
Well, thank you. And you too.
All right. Anyway, take care.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.